Blog Talk Radio.
Where are you now when darkness seems to win? Where are you now when the world is crumbling? Oh, I hear you say, I hear you say, look up, child.
Welcome everybody back to the show, Turning the Tables with Talk, and today is our first show back since we lost our sister Barbara, our sister and co-host. But the good side of that story is that Sister Barbara was the host of our last show, and we have a recording of all of those shows. And so we were able to enjoy, I haven't done it yet, but I want to go out and re-listen to that show. I sampled just to make sure that it was in there. And I want to, we'll be able to go back and listen to those, all the good words that Sister Barbara has for us before her homegoing. And as most of you know, if anybody was ready for their homegoing, it was Sister Barbara. Very inspirational to myself as a sister, an older sister, and I can tell you that she was prepared for this trip. She had prepared a long time for this journey, and so it gives me some comfort and gives the family some comfort to know that Sister Barbara is now reaping her rewards. And that's the one comforting part about it. We thank you all for the kind messages, the calls, messages, and gifts and flowers that you sent over the course of her funeral observations in Atlanta. And then we had her body shipped back to Tennessee, our hometown in Columbia, Tennessee, for burial. And we had a funeral service there as well. And we thank you all for your kindness and your kind words, and it really does help us. And like I said, has helped us get through this tough time of the virus. Of course, we can discuss that, how the virus is keeping us isolated and quarantined, and of course, at the same time, I had my first granddaughter born on the 13th of March, and Sister Barbara, I sent her a picture, and she had responded and said, "Beautiful, God bless you all." And that was the last message I got from her. So that's, once again, inspiring for me, and that's the image I have of my sister, always just praising God. And many of you know that already. So, but the next day, following my granddaughter's birth, we lost Sister Barbara the next day So I had to fly out of Austin, Texas, into Atlanta and start arranging the affairs there and also calling ahead for the Tennessee services. But I was encouraged while I was there and by friends and family and everyone who Sister Barbara talked with. I was encouraged by to hear all the people talk about how they and Sister Barbara would sit and have conversations about God frequently and often, and that was a beautiful thing to hear that, because she really was a godly person and really loved Jesus Christ and didn't care where she was going to let you know. I had my 25th wedding anniversary here in Illinois. This was, we've been married 39 years now, so I don't want to say this was about 15 years ago almost, at least 14. And during the wedding ceremony, while the preacher was, giving his speech, and Sister Barbara was just letting everybody know that, she loved the Lord, and she was responding to the minister there, and he kind of thanked her. Well, I don't have, not often that I get, give me a little feedback. He said, I appreciate this. So that was a positive thing there. So let's see here. Make sure I'm back online. Well, talk back on. Okay. I hope that you can hear me there. I got something that told me that the call had cut off. So I was trying to redial in, and it's saying that the call is still going on here. So I think hopefully you can hear me there. So as we go, as you already know, the phone number to join in with this is 516-666-8431, 516-666-8431. And this is our first show back since our co-host, Sister Barbara, went home to be with Jesus, went home to be with the Lord. And so we are back this week wanting to get the show been moving. We've expanded the capabilities now. We can now have up to 50 callers. We're excited about that. So we encourage you, if you are with us here, tell some friends. We now have the ability to take in 50 callers per night, as we're doing our shows. And so that's just a wonderful addition that I wanted to add on and to make sure that we push this show forward in memory of my sister, Sister Barbara, and that's just what she had built this show to be. She named this show Turning the Tables with Talk, and so that's why we wanted to say this week that we wanted to keep the tables turning and thank all of you again. Let's see, who do we have on the line with us here tonight? We have a listener from the 770 area code. Who do we have there?
Veronica Smith.
Well, hello, Veronica. Thanks for joining us here. How are things in Atlanta, first of all?
It's different. I have a little dark cloud right now, but I'm gonna make it.
Oh, good. God bless you. Let's talk about that. What's going on in your life, Sister Veronica? Anything you wanna talk with us about?
Not right now. I'm just gonna be listening in.
Okay.
Barbara was my sister. That's all I gotta say right now. I just wanna listen, okay?
Okay, that works out well. We thank you.
Thank you.
We welcome you in. And one of the things that I'm gonna move on to some other folks here coming up here. One of the things that we always, right now, that I want to talk about initially here, Minister Vaughn had an obligation tonight, but she is going to try to jump back in with us here later on as well. But we wanted to discuss the things that are going on right now with the coronavirus and how that virus is affecting our daily lives. I guess the short abbreviation for it is the COVID-19 virus. And the one interesting statistic that I heard was that 30% of the victims who have acquired the virus were from the African-American community. And so there, I also heard later today that one of the main reasons that people are acquiring the virus the most is a shortage of vitamin D. And so I found that interesting, knowing that I'm on vitamin D, 3,000 IUs of vitamin D per day. I just take them in the morning, take pills in the morning. I found that interesting because it's ironic, if you will, because African-Americans and darker-skinned people, our skin is set up as a sun protectant or as somewhat of a sunblock. And so due to that, being that we get vitamin D from the sun, our darker skin blocks out a lot of those sun rays. And that's the reason why many people in general, even light-skinned people who are staying inside and working inside and driving inside of a car and going inside your home, most of us don't have enough vitamin D in our systems. But this particularly pertains to African Americans. And vitamin D is very, very important to our bodies being able to function. And so I can see that that could be one reason. Because we're here in the winter months and early spring months, we haven't been outside and getting all the vitamin D that we normally would get from the sun. One doctor, I believe the statistic was, and don't hold me to this, a white person needs 30 minutes in the sun to get sufficient vitamin D, and a dark-skinned African-American, I guess I could say brown-skinned, African-American needs about 3.5 to 4 hours in the direct sun to get enough vitamin D because our bodies and our skin, the melanin in our skin, blocks a bunch of those rays from the sun. And so that's why we block out, with those rays, we also block out a lot of vitamin D. Now, if you put us back into a hot climate, such as Africa or any of the equatorial countries, then we would get enough vitamin D because the sun is so intense, even beyond what our skin blocks out, a bunch of it still makes it through to our bodies. And therefore, we would get ample amounts of vitamin D. But then we come north to the North American continent, and that's where we see that the vitamin D deficiency is affecting everybody in this country. It's just really been addressed over the last 15 years and over the last 10 years addressed with patients. But it's really one of those things that I could see. I didn't know that vitamin D deficiency would make you so more susceptible to this coronavirus. But I just heard that today, and I wanted to mention that so that if indeed that's the case, then I could see how the coronavirus would be affecting the African-American community a little bit at a higher percentage. It's only 30% of the total patient count of coronavirus infections. But for us, for the African-American community, that number of affected people is at a much higher inter-race percentage than that latter 70% for a giant white community. So I hope that kind of makes sense. So if there's anything that you can do to get yourself some vitamin D levels measured, that's always a good thing. If you want to go and get some vitamin D, you can find it in the regular drugstore. You can find it in some of the health food stores. You will definitely find it in the Walgreens, CVS, or whatever, Rite Aid drugstores, back in the, with the nutrients or the back with the vitamins and other nutrients back there. That's vitamin D. Now, personally, I think I'm a medium brown skin person, and I take about 2,000-3,000 IUs. One pill is normally 1,000 units, 1,000 IUs. Forgot what the I stands for, individual. One pill. So I take, I think it's 2,000, because I take two of those small pills. They're real small capsules, and I take two of them per day. I'm a veteran, so part of my medication comes in from the VA hospital, the Veterans Administration. So prescribed that vitamin D to me, and I've been taking it for the last about 7 years. So that's a good thing there. The other thing I wanted to talk about is I wanted to talk about the coronavirus quarantine and some of the justifications for it, some of the things that are going on in the news with it now, how we're turning the tables with talk on our health and on this important issue of the coronavirus pandemic. The things that thus far that has been affecting us in the nation here, the virus was officially noted here in the United States. The first case was noted on January the 21st. Now, given the 2 to 3 week incubation period of the virus, it's suspected that it was probably on shore, on land, 2 to 3 weeks prior to that, which would put it somewhere around the turn of the year that it was here in country. But of course, we were not taking the precautions because we didn't realize it was here yet. It was still affecting the country of China. And so here we weren't really doing any social separation, any mask or anything of that level. Or one of the things we would have done is I think the national leaders would have gotten on top of the masks shortage and ventilators and started a little bit earlier. So now that the virus has hit us, 700 people dying per day in New York, 800 the day before, 890 the day before that, these numbers are just astonishing. And the one thing that you'll realize is that we have more coronavirus cases than any country in the world. Some of that's expected. I mean, we're a good-sized country, not as far as land mass is concerned. China and Russia are huge. But as far as population, the density of our country, people are pretty close together. And so, as you can imagine, the eastern side of the United States is packed in more densely than the western coast, California, Oregon, Washington. And so where Seattle was affected hard initially, taking means such as the 6-foot social separation, quarantines, and that's worked well for them and California. But one would expect that since California is less dense, has much more room than New York does. New York is a much smaller landmass with about the same or 3/4 of the population of California pressed into a small area of the state of New York, smaller. So those things are understandable. So we've had the interesting story for me. I was saying that my granddaughter was born in Austin, Texas. We knew she was going to be delivered that day by cesarean. So we were all down there in Austin, Texas for her birth. my wife, my daughter came from New York City. My wife and I from Illinois here. And so the hospitals there were already taking these precautions. One entrance in and out of the hospital, the main front entrance. There you had to answer some questions. Do you have a fever? Have you been around anybody with a fever? And then they actually put this bracelet or this bracelet, I guess, paper bracelet on your wrist. So it was restricted then, but we still could fly. I got the word of Sister Barbara's passing that following morning, Saturday the 14th. So I was able to get a flight. My sister, Minister Vaughn, I were able to get a flight out of Austin. She drove up from San Antonio, and we were able to get a flight from Austin into Nashville direct. And so that was good. We were able to go ahead and get some lodging for everybody in Atlanta. I said Nashville, I think. But we flew directly from Austin, Texas, into Atlanta. And Sister Vaughn's, Minister Vaughn's granddaughter was with us as well. And then our brother flew in. And so the airports at the time, the traffic was scarce, but nobody was wearing masks or anything like that. I was sitting two seats from the next person, so there was a gap between us, but it wasn't a 6-foot gap. But so we got to Atlanta, and some of our main concerns that were starting to occur, I would like to make sure that I say my sincere thanks and appreciation, show my appreciation to, I believe it's Carl Williams Funeral Home there in Atlanta, and he took care of getting our sister appropriately arranged, getting her body there with them, and taking care of all the arrangements and prep for us so that she was nice and presentable and ready for her trip. So we were at one point there, we were concerned that the quarantine and the virus was going to our ability to have a funeral. Because you'll recall some people in some states were saying that funerals have been called off. Illinois was one of those states. Other states said no large gatherings. And so I had to turn my son away from coming down to the funeral because he has a newborn baby. And if they come, you know, they'd have to expose the newborn baby to this virus out here, and we just couldn't take that chance and do that as well. So there were my sister, Minister Vaughn, had to do some of the same things, but her kids just refused not to come. And so I definitely understand it. Sister Barbara is just a sweetheart to the family. She was their second mom, Minister Vaughn's children. And I moved around the world in the military a lot more, but it did feel special to see Sister Vaughn's children and her grandchildren come on out to say farewell to Sister Barbara. So the virus gave us a scare there, and I'm pretty sure it probably kept some people at home. But it gave us a scare because it came to the point to where some people, for instance, Sister Barbara's goddaughter, her town ended up getting locked down. So she was able to come to the services in Atlanta, thank goodness. But then they locked down her city the next day, and so she was not able to come up to Tennessee to meet all of her uncles and everything Ethiopian uncles and relatives, but they were able to make it on in, so it worked out well. Everybody knows that Sister Barbara had a close connection with her in-laws. Her husband was Ethiopian, Isaiah. He was of Ethiopian descent and had lots of relatives that were here. And so Sister Barbara really intermingled and mixed in well with the Ethiopian community, and especially the Christian sects of the Ethiopian community. Most of them are. And actually was able to speak with them and interact with them as well as she did all of her American friends. But Sister Barbara had lots and lots of friends who knew her there in Atlanta. So that was really rich. And then I got just getting to meet and talk with some of her acquaintances. That was really good. But I wanted to also say, in reference to wearing the mask and social separation and going to church, I want to know how you feel. I've heard a few things here. I've heard some people say, look, if I'm going to church, God's going to protect me against this virus. I've heard other people say viruses are of this nature that we live in, parts of this planet. And just as if we wouldn't walk outside if we got reports that there were tigers and wolves in our neighborhoods running around, we might not go outside and take that risk if we could see those things. But I believe personally that since we can't see these microscopic animals, or not animals, organisms, that sometimes we don't fear them properly. And I wonder, does that have something to do with a high rate of infection in the African-American community as well? Because sometimes, you know, people wait until they can see something, until it's tangible, before they believe that, you know, this is going to be negative for them. Young people are like that all the time. A lot of the time, they don't fear death because they haven't seen death. A lot of the kids that they know haven't died, and so they haven't witnessed death of people their age. So they've witnessed death of older people, they might say, but not many people that their age. And that's why when they do have a friend or schoolmate who passes on, it's a very traumatic situation for the whole class, the whole student body. And so that's one thing there is, are we not afraid of the virus because it's something that we can't see and something that we can't visually witness? And so that would be, that's interesting. I pondered that a few days. Also, the mask. I'm seeing more and more African-Americans here in Illinois using the mask. But for a long time, I go in the grocery store, and I've got a mask out of my workshop that I used to use for doing wood projects. And I found a couple of new packs in there, pulled them out. I take me some paper towel or toilet paper, fold it, and just put it inside that mask, because that's truly just a dust collector. But once I put that paper towel in there, I'm breathing through the paper towel. If I only fold it about three or four times, you can breathe through it just fine. And then the dust cover mask itself holds it all together. But for days, for some days, I didn't see many of our folks wearing the mask. And of course, there were many of them not wearing the mask. But so I wonder if we're taking this thing seriously, to make sure that we don't, you know, proliferate this infection. And so the last thing is the quarantine, 6-foot separation deal. So I think that I believe that the responsible people are keeping the 6-foot gap, social gap, or social separation. I believe that there are also people who I've seen that are just pretty much, you know, giving people daps and handshakes. I know for sure they aren't socially separating. A couple of guys that I was driving by, you know, was just giving each other a dap and gave each other a hug and talking 1 foot away just like there was nothing going on. And so that's the situation when we start talking about things that affect us that we wait to take care of, we wait to address. The things that we should be addressing, and this goes even back as far as things like discipline and integrity and loyalty and trying to transcribe those principles over to make sure that we all know what they are, but just making sure that because we can't physically see them, know that they are there and they're expected in the workplace. They're expected at the church house, at home, but you see lots of people who, violate those expected standards simply because they don't see it sitting or standing before it, resting before them, and so therefore they put it on the back burner, and I think that's a problem that helps get our community infected. Because if we have a number of people walking within the community, they think, well, I'm the only one that I'm hurting. No, that's not true. If you're walking in the community and not keeping your 6-foot social separation, you're walking in the community without a mask on, and if you sneeze, and then, also, another thing is access to medical care. Some people get a fever and might, you know, feel like they've got the coughs, but they also realize that they already have a medical bill from some other visit, and now they're afraid that if they go to the doctor, they're going to acquire a much higher bill, medical bill. And I was getting ready to say they're going to much higher medical bill. So that's also a question that of health in the African American and brown communities. I wouldn't even say that. I would just say in the lower income communities, because low income does not equate to brown communities, African American communities. There are all types of low income communities. But access to health care, if they don't think that they're going to be able to pay the bill, some people would prefer to stay home and try to weather this thing out. Like, I probably just have the flu. And the downside of that is that if you don't get yourself checked out, which they were telling folks for a while, don't come in and get yourself checked out unless you have some serious symptoms. And then, of course, but that's a problem if you stay at home trying to weather this thing out like a tough guy. Then you find out later that it's the coronavirus. Well, you've infected a lot of people who've come around you during those times. And so that's why we have to be really mindful of how we're taking care of ourselves in this era of the coronavirus. So I want to just make sure that I tell you all I love you all, and I want everybody out there to be very careful. Take care of yourselves. We have so many things to be thankful for. We know that God loves us. but we also don't want to overburden God. I always like to say, I know he's all powerful, but God's also got children in Bangladesh or that are hungry and starving and amongst a drought. So let him go and help those people. Don't put ourselves on the deathbed because we didn't want to realize that God has given us the ability to not go out and get harmed from this deadly virus. It's not a matter of God wants us to be in a church house this Sunday. Look, many ministers, many men of the cloth, many ministers and reverends and evangelists have already said that you do not have to be in that building to worship God. And they do not want you to come out and risk your own health. Other people, other ministers, other churches have said, we want you to come out. We need you in the church. We want you, I don't know if they want the tithing. I don't know if they want the money. But they've also sued some of these churches and some of these ministers have sued the states for telling them that they can't have worship service with 50 people to 200 people sitting side by side, breathing the same air. And I don't understand why they can't, or why they don't understand that. But it just kind of, it kind of shows you that some people, to them, the thing, the important thing is to get those butts in those seats. Because, you know, the bills aren't going to pay themselves and those wallets aren't going to walk over there and the dollars aren't going to jump out of the wallets by themselves. They need bodies in the seats. So that's my wrap-up of the coronavirus. This week, my grandson and I, you know, I was sitting on the porch earlier last week, and the neighborhood, our neighborhood, which is normally cars, you know, moving, not a high number of cars, but a medium pace of cars. And as I was sitting out on my front porch, I just sat there and it hit me just how few cars were moving. The neighborhood, the town is just locked down. And then one car took off at about 7:30, took off, and it was my neighbor. My house faces the main street, but the side of my house where my garage is, cul-de-sac. And it's one of those neighbors in the cul-de-sac who pulled up to the stop sign and turned out onto the main street, to which my front porch is facing. And it just hit me, and I thought about, you know, being in the military 27 years, I'm so used to when conflicts happen, I'm so used to knowing I'm the one that's supposed to go and place myself in between my mom, my family, my country, and the bad guys. And so here, the nurses, the healthcare providers, the doctors, the therapists, the technicians, the janitors, these are all of the people, and believe it or not, funeral home directors and things that are collecting these bodies and trying to, you know, do something with them for their family, trying to make sure the families get to honor their loved ones. These are the heroes now. So when I looked up and I was on my porch and I saw my neighbor pulling away, she's a physical therapist. It really touched me that she was going out. Because physical therapy, remember, even people who have lung disorders go to a physical therapist for breathing exercises. People who break a leg go to a physical therapist. So she's in there trying to help people survive and get better. So she was heading out of the house to go fight the war, is the way it came into my eyes. It came before my eyes that day, and I was motivated. So I went online to FedEx.com, and I designed a big, beautiful 3-foot-tall by 5-foot-wide sign that said, thank you to healthcare provider Bridget Whiteside and all other healthcare providers during this COVID-19 healthcare era. And then it just said, your efforts are appreciated in the Harwell family, from the Harwell family. And then I have not spoken with them, because that family has been trying to contact me to say thanks, and I don't want to do that because that's not why I did it. If I had thought about it, I wouldn't have put the Harwell family on that sign. So in any case, I was going to put it in my yard so when she comes back home, she could see it. But then my grandson and I thought, let's put it where she can see it when she's going to work tomorrow. And it ended up taking me about 2 days to get the sign made. Normally it's shorter than that, but I called in late in the evening. The sign at the T, this road coming out of our neighborhood, comes to a T on a major, on a bigger highway. And when she stops at that T, so we went the other side of the street and put the sign in the ground with some stakes. I had some metal stakes in my workshop, and we secured the sign to those stakes so that when she pulled up to that point the next day, she was able to see those stakes, see the sign. And as it were, she took a picture of the sign and her post on, and put a post on Facebook. And I thought it was just wonderful. She didn't know, or at the time she had not read the Harwell group, because it's the Harwell family, because it's written in such small letters. That portion is, everything else is big. And, you know, from the Harwell family, I just put the Harwell family in parentheses. That part is so, is written in such small font that she didn't see it. And so she put a post online that said, that simply said, you won't believe it, I was driving to work this morning, and as I was leaving my neighborhood, I see this sign that has my name on it. And she said, there's a picture of the sign, and she went on to say, you don't know how much, how good this made me feel. And she said, to whoever did this, I thank you. And so I thought that was good. It's just one of the things that I think we should all make sure that we do that. Take the time to point out to the folks who may not even be related to us, just take the time, even if you slip a little note in their mailbox, I don't know if I want to do that, put a little sign in your yard, anything to help them recognize, put a sign in the back window of your car or wherever, help them realize just how much we appreciate what they've done for us. Listen, my grandson's mother works in a retirement home, and one of their workers had came down, tested positive. Then next door neighbor, when we were growing up, she's a RN at Vanderbilt University Hospital in Nashville, Tennessee. And her husband, Kevin, was our third door down neighbor. And she and Kevin always, they were always boyfriend, girlfriend since junior high school or early high school. So they're married. They've been married about 34 years. But she told me she was positive because she wrote me to say that she was sorry she didn't get to Sister Barbara's funeral there in Columbia, but that the hospital had advised them not to go around any large groups. And so then I just found out yesterday that her husband had come down with it, and he was really, really sick. So I say that, please let those healthcare workers and healthcare sanitation workers and sanitation workers that come to our house steal and pick up our trash and rubble, which is, you know, has all kind of germs, I would suppose. Make sure you take the time to thank these folks. I do, because I've been in the military. I've come home in a military uniform. I've gotten a hero's parade in the airport. And I can tell you, it's not expected, but it sure makes you feel good. It makes you feel like I'd go and do it all again. And these are true warriors who are going out. These nurses, all these health professionals are true warriors. Because I got to tell you, if you haven't heard it, you need to do some research. Look on YouTube. Just, there are plenty of nurses and healthcare providers, I should say, that have walked off the job. They are afraid of this virus. Can't blame them. Don't blame them at all. Just simply saying, let's just make sure that the ones that we do, the ones that do stay, and the ones that do, you know, stay in there and keep working, those are the people who we need to make sure we show our appreciation for. Because there are some shameful people who have just walked off the job. As well, I think the other heroes that I have noticed are the grocery store attendants and the store delivery people and even the stores that where you have to pick up your product outside. These folks are they're making contact with the public. And so they can put themselves in danger as well. So just take the time to say thank you to these good folks as they, you know, dedicate themselves or isolate themselves away from their families. In many cases, these healthcare professionals come home and cannot, you know, make contact with their children. My grandson is with me right now because his mother is a healthcare provider in a nursing home. And so he's over with me. We're having fun together. He doesn't necessarily like that I make it and do his homework, but I don't want his mom hitting me over the head. So he is going to school online. He's taking online classes, but he's just a fun guy. We have fun. We got to do our work and have fun. But we're making the best of it. So all of you to know that we are in this together. This is one of those events. My granddaughter is going to be able to say she was born right in the midst of the coronavirus plague. I know they'll call it a plague. It's a pandemic. But, you know, the plague word sounds even more dramatic. And I know that the press might call it that. But this is one of those things that we're going to get through. We will get through this together. I want you to keep your heads held high. A lot of people are getting depressed. A lot of depression, a lot of suicides, a lot of depression. Make sure that you find ways. If you have to go to your backyard, if you have to take a towel and lay it down. If it's a rectangular towel, lay it down so that the long part is going from right to left in front of you horizontally, and the short part is going away from you in two straight lines. You want to fold that towel in one half distance from the bottom and fold the top in one half distance from the top. And then you want to take the bottom half and fold it into the top half, slip two rubber bands on each end, and then fold the ends of the towels, the rubber bands would go in about 3 inches, fold the ends of the towels over the rubber bands, and then the ends of the towels, you put it up to your nose, the ends of the towels that you folded in will rest right near you, in front of your ears. But you'll put those rubber bands on your ears, and it will serve the same purpose as the mask. So make sure that you do that. Use those masks. Use whatever you have to. And get out and take a walk. I know in my neighborhood, people are walking their dogs so much. There's been a cartoon or something that came on Facebook where this dog was like, nobody else is going to walk me again. You know, everybody wants to go walk the dog now. So observe the social rules, social separation rules, use your mask. If you can get up and just walk around your small backyard or front yard, get yourself out, yell across the neighborhood yell across the street to the neighbor, ask how they're doing, converse with people, sit on your porch and wave at the people going by. Do something to get yourself out of the house and put yourself in connection with people who are outside there. Tonight's show is only going to be an hour long, and I appreciate you all for joining me tonight. I wanted to make sure that we got back online and get this show back on the road. So we appreciate you. I appreciate you being with us here tonight. Thank you for the patience when we've been out for the last couple of weeks taking care of our sister and then mourning her loss. We appreciate all of those who loved Sister Barbara and showed the love that you did for all that she did in her life. And in her short 62 years, I can tell you that no one praised God and served God more than Sister Barbara. I say that not literally, but figuratively. She really loved the Lord. I used to tell her that she was my saint, and she really hated for me to say that. She was saying, don't say that. God gives me my reward. I don't need you to say that. So I thank you very much. We thank you very much. It's 8:30. We're going to get out of here, but I thank you. We'll see you next week again. 8:30 Eastern.
God, I need to be free.
7:30 Central.
Lord, I
want to
be free. God, I need to be free.